But you're also active in such issues as the pedestrian mall, the sleeping ban, and hemp, and I guess medical marijuana.
Yeah, I like politics, Robert. I mean, I have for years, since my early 30s. I'm 48. The issue of abuse of power came to me in a way that I could not refute. I began to realize that these situations are not isolated.
What do you think of the new DA? Any comments on him?
I will, for the record, say that I lobbied for Ron Ruiz. I think he was by far the best choice that was available, and I wish him the best. He inherited a disaster. He took a third cut in pay for the position. Now, whether he rises to the occasion or not, I think is remains to be seen. What is imperative is that the community as a whole finds a way to deal with this track record of abuse of power that is now being publicly represented by a judge. This should be an outrage, really.
Give me your number again, Bob.
457-2670, anybody that wants to call me. This issue cannot, in any honest political person's way of thinking, go away. It should not. We cannot slot this off. I've heard so many one-liners. Who are you going to replace them with? They're all like that. It's nonsense. It's nonsense. You take a stand. When a situation like the Danner DA office hits the notes that it was hitting in terms of scoundrel abuse of power, we simply must, as a community, say this cannot be tolerated.
Well, I guess the thing to do is
we look the other way.
The thing to do is to look at the outlines of concerns and to see that the current one, that the current district attorney's office isn't doing it, and two, to see that this kind of behavior isn't following Art Danner into judicial office.
He should not be a judge. There is, I mean, let's just say that bluntly. Mm-hmm. No one with the track record of Art Danner in power should be anything other than out of power publicly. Mm-hmm. There's no way to justify Arthur Danner III as a judge. There was no way to justify him as DA after 1986. Essentially, after the drunken car wreck to which they tried to nail the guilt on Sandra Larson, the victim. Mm-hmm. I mean, after that point, you're talking about looking the other way at an obvious, gross double standard.
Well, let me, again, for a final time, give you your number and thank you for calling in.
Thanks a lot, Robert. 457-2670.
So if you want the dope on Danner, give Bob a call.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
If they're unwilling to work, just try me. I'll sweep the streets of shovel shit. I'll chew a bit of anything. Willing to turn me hand to anything, anything, anything.
won't charge cops in Riverside killing. A story from the San Francisco Examiner of May 8th, Riverside. Four police officers were justified when they fired 23 bullets at a young black woman they found sitting armed and unresponsive in a disabled car, the district attorney said. District Attorney Grover Trask said Thursday that the officers may have acted hastily and made mistakes in judgment, but they did not act criminally when they killed 19-year-old Tisha Miller in December. Miller's death led to allegations that the officers, three whites and a Latino, were racists. Religious leaders, civil rights activists, and residents of Riverside, 60 miles east of Los Angeles, protested the shooting at town hall meetings, vigils, and marches. "We thought we were going to get justice, but we just got the same old thing," said the Reverend Burnell Butler, Miller's cousin. "Police officers are able to get to murder and get away with it." Miller had pulled into a gas station parking lot with a flat iron. Relatives who arrived to help her said they called the police after Miller appeared to be having a seizure. Trask said the officers found Miller unresponsive, lying on the fully reclined driver's seat with a gun in her lap. "They were unable to awaken her by banging on the window, shining lights, or shaking the car," he said. When an officer tried to break a window with a baton and reach for the gun, Miller sat up, lifted a pager, and stared at the cop, who backed away, Trask said. One officer yelled at the others to hold their fire, and the woman lay down again, Trask said. When she rose up again and appeared to reach for the gun, the officers all fired, the prosecutor said. A coroner's report indicated all the bullets entered her body from the back, proving that she was not lying down when she was shot, Trask said. Miller was hit by 12 bullets. Four struck her in the head. Toxicology tests showed Miller had a blood alcohol level of 0.13%. A driver in California is legally intoxicated at 0.08%. Tests also detected marijuana residue.
Another 12 months gone. What are you two looking for a job? What's that a show? Where did it go? And how? Frittered away on the box, the fox is eating my life. Tired of the bickering rows. Ashamed of the things that I say. I'm tired of being ashamed. Disgusted with the smell of the scrap heap. And scared of the thoughts that come into me head. Jesus, I wish I would. Unless you're one of the walking dead, you don't know what it's like.
U.S. firing radioactive ammo in Balkans, May 8th. This is from the San Francisco Examiner, page one story. Depleted uranium poses toxic threat to troops, civilians, by Kathleen Sullivan. The Pentagon has confirmed that U.S. Air Force jets are firing radioactive bullets in Yugoslavia, reigniting concerns raised after the Gulf War about the hazards the ammunition poses to soldiers, civilians, and the environment. At a Pentagon briefing earlier this week, Major General Chuck Wald said Air Force A-10 Warthog jets are firing depleted uranium bullets at Yugoslav tanks. The ammunition, which was fired for the first time in combat by U.S. jets and tanks during the 1991 Gulf War, leaves a trail of contaminated dust and debris on the battlefield. During that war, the Pentagon didn't warn American soldiers about the health risks linked to the ammunition, a situation the agency admitted last year may have caused thousands of, quote, unnecessary exposures. Veterans groups worry that history will be repeated in the Balkans, where thousands of soldiers have already been deployed and where ground and peacekeeping troops may arrive later. It's our impression that the Pentagon is not training soldiers about depleted uranium exposure, said Paul Sullivan, executive director of the National Gulf War Resource Center, a coalition of groups fighting for medical care for ailing Gulf War veterans. Our troops are not prepared. Sullivan said he was left with that impression after an April meeting with top Pentagon officials in which he requested copies of training materials and records of classes. In basic training, drill sergeants have to sign off that soldiers have completed training tasks, Sullivan said. We asked the Pentagon to provide verification that classes on depleted uranium hazards had taken place and to provide copies of the training material. They said no. However, Dee Morris, a Pentagon spokeswoman, said she watched an Army training video on depleted uranium hazards during a presentation at Fort McClellan in Alabama. The training videos are being used with some caveats, Morris said. We're concerned with the message the videos convey is a little bit heavy-handed. The videos advise soldiers to minimize the time they spend around blast sites, maximize their distance from the wreckage, or wear protective clothing, including gas masks, if they know they will be exposed to its radioactive dust or debris for more than a few minutes. The video says contaminated dust can be ingested if gloves are not worn and the dust is not washed off before eating, drinking, or using the latrine. Initially, Morris also said the newest edition of the Army's training manual is available and includes information on avoiding depleted uranium hazards on the battlefield. The book Soldier's Manual of Common Tasks lists dozens of duties soldiers must master in basic training, how to hold an M16 rifle, read a compass, put on a gas mask. The Pentagon said last year that the new edition would include information on how soldiers should protect themselves from depleted uranium dust and debris. I've actually seen it, Morris said of the thick paperback book with its distinctive green camouflage cover. Later, she admitted, however, that she hadn't seen the manual, which has not been sent to the printer. Guy Benson, an Army spokesman, said no publication date has been set for the manual. He said the Army has prepared materials for commanders and training officers that will be used in an interim as a stopgap measure. Dan Fahey, author of a 1998 report that criticized the decision not to train Gulf War troops or conduct medical screenings after the war, said it appears the Pentagon is trying to dodge its responsibilities once again. If American forces don't have radiation detection devices and protective clothing, and if they haven't been trained about the hazards of depleted uranium, they should not be sent to Kosovo or other areas where it has been shot, said Fahey, a staff member at Swords to Plowshares, a San Francisco veterans' rights group. If they are exposed, they should be tested as soon as possible in accordance with Army regulations. Depleted uranium is a radioactive metal that is nearly twice as dense as lead. Fahey said the United States should also keep track of where the ammunition is fired so the areas of contamination can be identified later and cleaned up. In recent years, the Pentagon has downplayed the health risks of combat exposure to depleted uranium, contradicting the findings of reports published before the Gulf War. A 1990 study by an Army contractor said health hazards linked to exposure, kidney damage, and cancer were manageable only with proper industrial hygiene controls and monitoring, field practice, and medical surveillance. When depleted uranium explodes, it aerosolizes, creating a fine mist of radioactive particles. While Pentagon scientists now say there is little reason for concern about inhaling depleted uranium dust, independent experts say the substance can damage any part of the body in which it is stored, including the lungs, lymph nodes, liver, kidneys, muscle, and bone. Many Gulf War veterans worry that the illnesses that plague them today may be linked to their exposure to depleted uranium. Last year, Iraqi doctors said they feared a disturbing rise in leukemia and stomach cancer among civilians who live near the former war zone may be linked to depleted uranium contamination of Iraqi farmland. And this, again, is a story in the May 8th edition of the San Francisco Examiner. On the front page, this isn't some radical socialist rag, folks. This is the group that hands out the Pentagon's PR statements, and it looks like even the Pentagon can't get its PR person straight. This Dee Morris woman is apparently talking about books that haven't been published yet. And of course, the interesting thing to me is all this talk about soldiers, they're bombing civilians, folks, over in Yugoslavia. They're bombing convoys. They're bombing hospitals and embassies. Admittedly, these are now being dismissed as accidents, but how can they accidentally do these bombs with cluster bombs? It's hard for me to get to understand how bombs can make one pass over a bridge, bomb the bridge with cluster bombs, then come back and do it again, and then finally come back a third time so as in a fashion that inhibits rescue crews coming in to try to clean up the carnage that has been produced, as has happened, well, that happened in one of the bombings of two bridges in the last week and a half. according to mainstream media. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Bathrobus Pierre Robert Norse. Call-in number, in case you want to comment on any of this or have your own perspective aired, is 427-3772.
And I don't need some caliphate, get some color, get from Baskerville to tell me to get on the fight. Not next year, mister, but now give me a job. I'm at the end of me tether. Give me a job or I'll get on me bike and tear your stinking world apart.
And we're on the air with a caller. Hi, caller.
Hi. So that was the San Francisco Examiner, May 8th?
It was. It's story by Kathleen Sullivan of the Examiner staff, and I think it was repeated in a couple of other publications. I think the LA Times also covered it, and of course it's a particular concern to vets. They have been, I think that one of the folks next Wednesday at the forum at the Vets Hall at 6:15 is going to be talking about that. And certainly, if they won't be talking about it specifically, they will have enough information to answer questions about it and to give you some more documentation on that.
I think it's really important, and I also wonder when I hear about it, I mean, not to sound naive, but why are they doing this?
Well, I think it's just a better, you know, it's twice as dense as lead. So it's a tank-penetrating kind of material.
I see.
Penetrates almost any kind of, again, I'm speculating here because I'm not a man who's ever worked with depleted uranium, and I haven't read much about it. But that's my assumption.
It mainly is because it can penetrate through the tanks.
That's my guess.
Okay, it's not some kind of
it's not a
plot to destroy the country by killing everyone through cancer.
No, I think probably they're trying to play that down rather than, you know, play it up as a weapon.
It's such a ridiculous, foolhardy, idiotic thing to do.
Well, I think it shows you the position the military really feels they're in. They're obviously being reassured by their experts and by those who are in the know that they can do this, that they've got protective cover to do this. You know, I mean, they did it in the Iraqi war, and they've been able to successfully cover it up for a decade. So why not do it again?
Well, if this gets out, the momentum behind a ground war will vanish. I mean, the population doesn't seem to support it right now.
Mm-hmm.
But if this came out, just from the self-interested, rah-rah America, we love our troops kind of mentality, people wouldn't support that.
Do you hear among your friends much interest in a ground war?
Not at all.
What about the other way around? Is there much interest in coming out on the streets to protest the current air war?
Unfortunately, no. I think that the real attitude is, I was just talking with people about this last night, and I think we're living right now, everybody is living in a very schizophrenic fashion. On the one hand, we're aware that this terrible thing is going on. On the other, we're not really doing anything about it. We're just kind of hoping it goes away. I mean, I don't see mass demonstration of the sort. Like, I think there's one coming up in June, right, in Washington? A huge one planned?
Well, I'm hoping to get a report from Jeff, who was at the San Francisco protest yesterday. There was about 2,000 people, he said, on the streets. So when I went up there 2 weeks before, there were 1,000 marching from Powell and Market all around San Francisco. So there is some protest happening. And, of course, there is, as I said, there's a number of forums coming up.
Are these protests getting much play in the mainstream media?
No. Almost no play that I've seen. Again, I don't watch television, and I do read a lot of papers. You don't get, I think the Sentinel has done one little article on the town clock protest. But for example, there was a protest through Santa Cruz on Friday. I guess it came on the heels of the bombing of the hospital and the market in Nice. I don't know if you heard about that.
Nice, sorry.
NIS, Nice, and it was, you know, they killed 15 civilians and wounded more at that bombing with cluster bombs, bombs that float down little parachutes, and then 50 little separate clusters from each of the big cluster bombs, and they then explode all over in shrapnel. that causes this collateral damage. And I suppose the theory there is to, and again, I speak out of ignorance, and if anyone who wishes to correct me, please call in at 427-3772. But my understanding is you want to create casualties so that people have to, the military has to expend its resources on taking care of the wounded. So it's not intended so much to kill as to wound. Now, maybe I'm thinking of another weapon that's like a cluster bomb, but that was my understanding as to what a cluster bomb does. So this is a direct attack on Nice, and then three missiles hitting the Chinese embassy, which stands alone in a building, all from different angles. And there's an intensified.
Yeah, maybe we can alienate Russia and China and make things even worse. You know?
It gets me upset, I'll tell you. And I note that the headline in today's San Francisco Examiner Chronicle, which is the Sunday Chronicle, I guess it's the day after the article that I just read you, the paper, it says that NATO will continue war. NATO refuses to stop the war. Again, regarding the outrage around from China and from Russia, and one would hope from Americans and other people throughout the world. I mean, there have been massive protests in Greece and other places against this, and of course China, they burned one embassy and they've been stoning another and so forth. I guess they burned a consulate.
So maybe the media attention that's being paid to these quote unintended consequences of destroying a country by air, maybe this will sort of point up the fact that we don't have super techno weapons that can somehow miraculously fight a war without killing people. I mean, the thing becomes a lot more real to people when we see more about these accidental bombings.
Well, I see a little bit of that process happening with an LA Times reporter named Paul Watson, who's actually inside Kosovo. I think he's the only American reporter inside Kosovo. And I don't know if you've got the internet, you can pick him up by getting to the LA Times on the internet, which isn't that hard, and you can read the Daily Times there and read his dispatches. And he talks about the vicious activity by the Serbian police in terms of the killing of people. Some in certain cases, groundlessly, and burning their homes and shooting them and so forth, and driving out hundreds of thousands of refugees. But in so doing, he also goes to the civilians that have been hit in this bombing, and to Albanians who are refugees who are now saying, "Why are you doing this bombing?" And this is actually encouraging to me. This is the first time I've heard of this from those who want to end the bombing. Pro-peace demonstrators, but I haven't actually heard it from refugees. In fact, I've heard the opposite, that they wanted the bombing to continue. But now I begin to hear that. And I want to encourage you and other people to check out the Santa Cruz Coalition to end the bombing of Yugoslavia, or of Serbia, I guess they're calling it now.
Well, there's going to be a community, you probably already announced this, but I just tuned in recently. There'll be this community teach-in on Wednesday.
Right, at 6:15 at the Veterans Hall. And that's
with
a great
Norman idea. Solomon and two others.
Yeah, Norman Solomon and I actually have their names here somewhere, and I'll find them in a moment. But this is actually, if you want to do some organizing, I'm all for, it's not even really a teach-in, I think it's three speeches and a sort of a series of questions, which is good. But I think what we need are all-day events up on campus, and then the kind of campouts and that they have for the ethnic studies program up in Berkeley. I don't know if you've heard about that.
Yeah, I heard about it.
You know, they're fasting up there, and that might not be such a bad idea either. If people start doing some fasting, and just come out to a massive event where it isn't just let's go in, educate ourselves, and go home, but something that keeps on going, and to which people can bring different kinds of energy at different times, depending on what their capabilities are, what their schedule are, what their interest is. And I think we need a much broader coalition. We need people like Tom Campbell, who I've got no use for in many other contexts, but at least he's fighting to, at the congressional level, to either have us declare war or get the fuck out. And since we won't declare war, it'll be get the fuck out if he can push that through the courts.
And I think the cost of this war is so obscene, especially when you think about the elimination of welfare a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's just so suspect what we're told are the motives. Who knows what's really going on, why we're really there. I've heard a lot of theories. Mm-hmm. But one thing we do know for certain is that it's going to cost like $6 or $10 billion to do this.
No, they've already passed a $13 billion appropriation in the House.
Okay, so we have the money to do this, right? To secure stability, whereas you know people starve in the streets here, and that's fine. So we have to say, what is stability in the minds of these people?
But isn't even stability, as you know. I mean, this has created massive hundreds of thousands of refugees. And as a
Clinton said, we're doing this to protect the stability of the region.
Right, right. Well,
who,
Well, I think we can, you know, we and Monica Lewinsky can both put that aside. You know, we know what Clinton's word is worth and what his public testimony is worth. I think what we need to do is decide what we're going to do now to stop this, because, I mean, you know, this has been going on for 46 days. 46 days. Imagine if you had to deal with 46 days of sirens and bombing every day. You know, with your children and with your house could be in ruins at any point. Not to mention having to deal with a criminal police force that's running around arresting you if you're, you know, or driving you out of your country if you're Albanian. But the bombing on top of this is just, well, my question is, what do we do next? And I guess I'm suggesting people show up at the meeting of the Santa Cruz Coalition to end the bombing, which you know, certainly is involved in the forum you mentioned, but it has a meeting tomorrow, and it's at 4:15 up on campus at the Student Center at the Third World. It's called the Third World Room. It's on the second floor, I believe, and that's at 4:15 at the Student Center up at UCSC. And I invite people to show up there and start taking some action. I mean, maybe whether that be all-night vigils or all-night sleepouts or planning for something very, very concrete and more extensive than anything we've done before. Whether it means, you know, just running through a city council member, a city council meeting with an air raid siren on. You know, or down Pacific Avenue with an air raid siren on. People have got to be made aware of what's going on here, and I think it's the thing to do. And I'm sorry for taking up all your time. You're the man who's calling in. Is there more? What do you? Have you been to any of these forums? I mean, have you?
I went to the first event that was when was it? You know, Michael Parenti and all the others.
Up on campus.
Up on campus.
That was a packed room, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, it was really encouraging. Of course, they all spent most of their time arguing with each other, the speakers. But I thought it was generally useful, and I taped that, broadcast it on another station, that KUSP, which is a more conservative station. I have a show you might like. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
What show is that?
Sundays at 6, it's called Another View, on for an hour, 6 to 7. If you like this show, listeners, listen to mine.
And that's on KUSP, which is at
88.9
FM.
Well,
you know, I think it may be time for a pro-war rally. I think if we held a big pro-war rally downtown, we'd get some media coverage. We could start announcing how we really need to have more depleted uranium and some really...
That would be interesting. Use irony.
Oh, definitely. Ladies Against Women used that approach 20 years ago. They had their rallies, and they, you know, you can't clean up the environment. It's too big. And, you know, good girls, you know, always do what men say and that sort of thing. It was, I think having a pro-war rally is what we need. You know, bomb's not food. That's my motto.
And speaking of food, no. I had another question about an article. This is something that you, I'm sure, would know. Mm-hmm. It's about this article in the Metro recently about the man on the hunger strike.
Lou Rice. Yeah, we've been talking about him earlier in the show.
Oh, well, maybe I should just listen to the show.
No. Go ahead. Tell me.
Well, you know, I don't know much about this, but apparently there are two main shelters in this town. One of them serves people and requires or gives alcohol and drug treatment, and you can stay there for 30 days max.
You're probably thinking of the River Street shelter, the River Street mini shelter, as I call it.
Hmm.
Yeah, there's a...
Here's what I'm trying to figure out. Why doesn't the shelter that man is concerned about have enough food?
Okay, well, he's not talking about the shelters. He is talking about what's called the Homeless Services Center, which is the place that people who don't have shelter go. It actually has only one shelter program, and it's called the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which is essentially a rotating, goes to different churches every night. program. And the problem with the ISSP program is it's always full. It has only 28 spaces. And we're talking about 500 to 1,500 homeless people who are homeless each night. Not all of them seeking into the program, but all of them illegal because of the sleeping ban. And certainly a vast waiting list for that program. So the other program you're talking about, the River Street Shelter, is actually a different kind of program. It has a waiting list too, but you have to meet all kinds of criteria, get social worked into it. It's not the same kind of thing. The ISSP program is just a program for people who want a place to sleep for the night, that they're, you know, they just have no housing, they're no place to sleep, they're not looking to be fine-tuned and taught how to do their income tax forms and how to write a check and all that sort of thing, that somehow these bureaucrats think homeless people need to learn, or at least that they get fat salaries for teaching them. I don't know how fat the salaries are. They get salaries for teaching them that I think could go better into such basic services as food and shelter. So that's
so
what he says.
This has 28 spaces, and
right.
One of the problems with it is it doesn't have enough food donations, right?
The Homeless Services Center covers three different programs. One is the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which doesn't serve food at all in the winter to the armory, and the meals are of those 28 people who get in are taken care of by the churches, but that's only 28 people. And usually hundreds of people come to the Homeless Services Center to eat. They come to eat at what's called the free meal at the Homeless Community Resource Center, which is the second program that the Homeless Services Center covers. And that is phones, lockers, the 4 o'clock free meal, the coffee in the morning, supposedly references and job training, which essentially results in their saying there are no jobs, you know, go check out the temps. And so the Homeless Services Center, which is what he's talking about, he's not talking really about the ISSP except secondarily, is the essentially it's the place you can get out there if you're really interested. You can get out there. It's out at Coral Street, 115 Coral Street, which is right next to Highway 1, right next to the new community house project, again, the multi-million dollar boondoggle. That it's a sort of a halfway house. It provides another program for 40 people, again, with a waiting list, which doesn't serve people emergency shelter, and that's the third program that is covered by the Homeless Services Center. But what he's talking about is the Homeless Community Resource Center portion of the Homeless Services Center, the daytime services and the free meal. And, you know, his general impression is that people are just not treated right there, and you can see it in terms of the lack of food, the quality of the food, how the food is prepared, the fact that there is no drinking fountain. Now they have, I think, a barrel that people can drink out of, and Catherine Byers, the mayor, and one of the key members on the board, who essentially has long been a defender of doing very little out there. I mean, most of them have, I'm afraid. I mean, they... That may not be entirely true. What is true is that they have been pressed for years to deal with issues of shelter, and they don't do much. I mean, the shelter essentially has been shut down since Coral Street. They had more shelter in 1995 than they do today. And, of course, the homeless population has increased considerably.
So the Homeless Community Resource Center provides food and space to store things, but it's inadequate. And the food is inadequate.
Well, yeah, his complaint is not about the storage space or about the phone service. They also have showers and laundromats.
Mm-hmm.
And, there are tables where you can sit there, and there are a place where you can hook up your bicycle. And it's kind of a place to hang out. What it really is, for my money, I mean, some people would call it, or did call it, a containment camp. But what it is it's staffed by police. The members on the board of directors are... there's a police officer, there's a bunch of merchants, the kind of merchants that opposed the right wing side of the last time's election. I don't know if you follow the local elections, Linda Steinau, and there was last time election there was, you know, a big brouhaha around the beach flats, and the three new council members who got in essentially kind of overthrew the old guard. Well, the old guard is on the board of the Homeless Services Center. It's kind of the showpiece. It's the way to keep the homeless out of the downtown so they won't be engaging in these abrasive demonstrations. This is my perspective anyway. So they won't be there, you know, annoying the tourists. This is a place to keep them off to the side. Now, they like to see themselves as a step, you know, in favor of a new road for homeless people. And, you know, some people have gotten help. There's no question about it. But obviously, there's some real concerns about the Homeless Services Center that they haven't met, and that's what he, on his 24-day fast so far, is trying to bring up.
Well, Well, I'm most concerned about this issue of them not having enough food because I work for the food service on campus, and we throw away enormous quantities of food every single day.
Wow.
So I want to know why there isn't more aggressive outreach to just get more food there. That's all I'm asking.
Let me give you, and that's an excellent question, and I unfortunately...
I called the mayor's office already.
Let me give you a number for my producer, who actually is a former board member of the homeless, it's called the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and she was cut off, she was actually stricken from the board with the connivance of the mayor, I might add, because she was too much of an advocate for homeless people, and Karen Gillette didn't like her. And so she actually has a lot more details on this. Maybe you two could talk. Her number is 423-HUFF, 423-4833. It's the number of Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And just, you know, brainstorm with her, because if you can get some of that food down there, you know, this might...
Well, but I can't. I don't have transportation, and I'm not interested in... I mean, I want somebody else to do this.
Well, maybe you can serve a part in that process. You don't have to do it yourself, you know.
But here's, I mean, why isn't it happening?
Well, that's an excellent question.
Okay. It's irritating to me when solutions are obvious and steps aren't taken. I'm sure you understand.
Oh, yeah. Vacant buildings and people freezing to death. I mean, this is America 1999, unfortunately, is sort of a short answer.
Whoever runs this community resource center, all they have to do is come up on campus in their car every day and get the food. It's right here. So I need to contact someone about that. I suspect, though, that there are reasons why they don't have enough food intentionally. Isn't the point to keep homeless people away from Santa Cruz, basically?
Well, that has been a suggestion that they don't want to make the services too attractive, or they'll just, you know, as Mike Rotkin says, if you let people sleep at night, everyone will come to town.
Which is basically acknowledging that the economic system is impoverishing most of the people.
It's also not true. I mean, in Miami, they've had a sleeping ban lifted for 5 years and no increase in the homeless population. So it's an error, his perspective.
There are always solutions, and they're always easy. It's just that nobody seems to want to put two and two together. And I do think there are interests that mitigate against these things. It's like, we don't want more people coming here who aren't tourists buying things,
mm-hmm.
Basically what it comes down to.
Sure.
Anyway, I don't know, this issue irritates me very much, because I have to do this. I throw this food away, and I can't stand it. And I don't see students taking an interest in these issues. You know, I see a lot of apathy, and it's quite irritating.
Really, I urge you to call my producer to talk to her, because I think there are independent organizations who might be willing to at least do something,
yeah,
like Food Not Bombs,
vehicle.
Feed the People. These are groups that have, you know, often cook their own food, or hey, maybe we can interest some individual volunteers with vehicles to come and just move the food down.
Yeah, they'd have to deal with the rat bastards I work for. They could probably work out some arrangement with them. That company doesn't want to give anything that could sicken anyone, like meat.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Dairy. But there's plenty of stuff that doesn't have any of that in it.
That's great.
All right, I'll talk to them.
Please.
And have a good day. Now take some more calls.
Hey, thank you. And I encourage folks to tune into your KKUP show.
KUSP.
KUSP.
It's more general. It's not like your show, which is quite laser beam focus on homeless issues.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Bye. Santa Cruz.
Yeah, hi, is this Robert North?
It is.
Hi, this is Lance Garrett. I'm a homeless person.
Yes, Lance.
I was just calling, I was listening to the radio, and I was listening to the guy from UCSC.
Mm-hmm.
I have a van, and I'd be willing to transport food from UCSC down to the homeless shelter.
That's wonderful.
Is there any way I can get in touch with that guy?
My suggestion is you call 423-HUFF.
423-HUFF?
He's not at that number, but I've asked him to call that number, and maybe that number, that you can get hooked up through that number.
Okay, cool.
And otherwise, just leave them your number, and I'll try and get in touch with him to get in touch with you.
Right on, cool. My phone number, it's voicemail, but I'll give it to you anyways.
Do you want it on the air or off there? We are on the air right now.
It doesn't matter, I don't care.
Go ahead.
It's 831-429. Mm-hmm. 0526.
Okay, 429-0526.
Yeah, and again, that's voicemail, and if he's listening right now, call me, and I'm more than willing to transport the food, because, all homeless, too. too, you know.
Have you eaten out there yourself?
At the homeless shelter?
Yeah.
When we came to Santa Cruz in January, and my wife was going to grad school here, and our car broke down. So, and we planned to just camp around town for the winter time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But our car broke down, so we were on the streets for a few days, and yeah, we ate down there at the I'm talking about the River Street shelter, the
free meal?
Yeah, the place where they have the laundry and the showers and all that.
The Homeless Services Center free meal, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, we've ate there a couple times.
Well, I know that one thing that Lou Rice has said, and let him know about this if you get down to the post office.
Yeah, we were going to go down there and talk to him today.
That would be great.
My wife was actually, she's talking about joining in his staff.
Oh, wow.
But
what can I say? Yeah.
But I want to express my feelings on Kosovo, too. I think that if we don't stop fucking around, we're going to start World War III. We're thumbing our noses at China and Russia right now, you know what I'm saying? We bombed China's embassy. We're inviting them to come in and, you know, and wipe us out, because Russia still has a very heavy military presence, and China, you know, is China. You know, there's how many billions of people over there, you know? We're trying to start World War III. For what reason? I don't know. For money, maybe. I don't know, but it's...
Or we're willfully blind.
Or we're willfully blind, for sure.
Yeah. I agree with you, and I encourage you to get in touch with the Coalition End the Bombing in Serbia, or go to the meeting on campus tomorrow at the, I guess
no,
it's...
No, see, now what I think we should do is have meetings downtown. We're all
or start a group, yeah.
Tourists downtown are going to have to see us, and they're going to have to recognize us.
I agree.
I mean, going up in the woods, nobody's going to even see us up there, you know what I mean?
Right. The only reason I mention them is that they're an established group, but I think if you want to start your own group, I would be the first to support it. And we were trying to do some tabling downtown around both the bombing, the sleeping ban, and uh-huh. I guess other issues like that. And
basic human rights issues.
Basic human rights issues. And if you want to help with that, you know, mention that at the 423 Huff line.
I mean we're both students, and she gets out in 3 weeks. I mean, we'd be willing to give most of our time, because I mean. We're in the same boat, you know. We have a vehicle, so we're one step up from being on the street, but I mean, we're still homeless.
Wow. Well, please, I will call you after we get off the air, and I hope I think this is really encouraging to everybody listening, that, you know, to see things actually happen rather than to talk about them is where we want to go.
Right on, man. I like I said, I've been listening to your program. I'm from Indiana, mm-hmm. and we moved here in January, and I just got onto free radio about a month and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been listening kind of idle, let it boil in my blood, you know, but I'm pissed off now, because I've had my fill. I mean, there's the park ranger and the lifeguards were up here kicking the Mexicans off the lighthouse field up here.
Tell me about it.
All right, check this out. There's one sign at lighthouse field, up by the lighthouse, that says $1,000 fine for being beyond the fence, right? And then all the other signs along the whole area up here just say, be cautious and play safe.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, this group of Filipinos and Mexicans came up here 2 days ago, it was on Saturday, and they climbed yesterday, and they climbed up over the fence, and they were all just sitting there fishing, you know, they were trying to be not in anybody's way, they were trying to get out of the sidewalk's way, and this park ranger and two lifeguards came over there and started kicking them off.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just using their God-given right to fish, you know, I mean, to supply food for themselves, you know, and that's your right.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and the surfers that come up here climb over that same fence and go down and surf in the water. But they don't get hassled because they have money.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? I'm totally into this. Give me a call back.
All right. And
all right.
Call my producer.
Okay, that's 423 Huff?
423 Huff.
Okay, right on.
Thank you.
Take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The heart of every man in our platoon must swell with pride for the nation's youth, the cream of which is marching at his side. For the fascinating rules and regulations that we share, and the quaint and curious costumes that we're called upon to wear. Now Al joined up to do his part, defending you and me. He was wants to fight and bleed and kill and die for liberty. With the hell of war, he's come to grips, policing up the filter tips. It makes a fella proud to be a soldier. When Pete was only in the 7th grade, he stabbed a cop. He's real RA material, and he was glad to swap his switchblade and his old zip gun for a bayonet and a new M1. It makes a fella proud to be a soldier. After Johnny got through basic training, he was a soldier through and through when he was done. Its effects were so well rooted that the next day he saluted a good humor man, an usher, and a nun. Now Fred's an intellectual, brings a book to every meal. He likes the deep philosophers like Norman Vincent Peale. He thinks the army's just the thing because he finds it broadening. It makes a fella proud to be a soldier. Ed flunked out of 2nd grade and never finished school. He doesn't know a shelter half from an entrenching tool, but he's going to be a big success. He heads his class at OCS. It makes a fella proud to be a soldier. Our old mess sergeant's taste buds had been shot off in the war, but his savory collations add to our esprit de corps. To think of all the marvelous ways they're using plastics nowadays. It makes a fella proud to be a soldier. Our lieutenant is the up-and-coming type. Played with soldiers as a boy, you just can bet. It is written in the stars, he will get his captain's bars, but he hasn't got enough box tops yet. Our captain has a handicap to cope with, sad to tell. He's from Georgia, and he doesn't speak the language very well. He used to be, so rumor has, the dean of men at Alcatraz. It makes a fellow proud to be what as a kid I vowed to be. What luck to be allowed to be a soldier. At ease.
And that's for all you old-timers who may remember Tom Lehrer. It makes a fella proud to be a soldier from, the 60s, early 60s, actually. Tom Lehrer is, of course, now a professor of mathematics up at UCSC for all you math folks or just for general information. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Our phone lines are open for those of you who want to call in. If you've got vehicles and you want to deliver food to the Homeless Services Center, give a call to Huff. We'll see if we can hook you up, although the bureaucratic entanglement here, it's like a minefield. They got their own cluster bombs out there if you try to help out. We brought soup up to the armory that had been left over. It was good soup. It was hot vegetarian soup. It was made by a man who ran a restaurant for 5 years, Joe Schultz. When we got up to the armory, they not only wouldn't let us bring it in, they demanded we leave. We were trying to get stories out about troll busting, the beating of homeless people, which, by the way, we've had more reports of in the last week. The specifics are not yet clear, but again, it seems more assaults against homeless people. Sport beating or troll busting is still going on. I did a little interview with Wiley Drake. You may remember Wiley is the pastor in Buena Park, California, who was tried and convicted by jury of keeping homeless people in his church, letting them sleep there, which was a violation of certain administrative zoning codes. Even though they found him guilty, they refused to sentence him to anything, and he's been continuing to lodge people in his church, and he goes to court, I guess, on May 12th, or thereabouts, in a lawsuit against the county, or against the city of Buena Park down there, part of the old commercial corridor with Knott's Berry Farm and Disneyland and so forth, in order to get some damages from the police for invading his shelter with, I think it was 15 officers with a baton drawn. And in order to, they said they were looking for, it wasn't quite clear what they were looking for. We actually went into this in some detail last show, but it had nothing to do with any criminality by the church. We have an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, Robert. It's not Wiley Drake yet. I need to say something in response to what those two guys were talking about getting food to the right and appreciative mouths.
Mm-hmm. And you've been involved in this program for a while yourself in different ways, or at least an observer of a knowledge.
Yeah, I get hungry frequently. But I wanted to talk about a little piece of legislation because I doubt if the Marriott Corp, which is an international corporation, knows about the local things like state law, but I can pass one on that's helpful for people that work in food service, and they get told they have to dump perfectly good milk products down the drain or whatever, you know? I mean, you know, the liability code of kitchen is very wasteful, very, very wasteful.
I know Arnold Abbott of Love Thy Neighbor over in Fort Lauderdale talked about a Good Samaritan law.
We have one here, and our own, formerly owned, Sam Farr helped get it through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is because they were trying to,
is the same
people
Sam
like
Farr.
Our Department of Health and whatever, hygiene, Diane Evans thing, whatever that board's called, would try to just harass people or even criminalize people for uncontrolled feeding or untaxed feedings or something.
Well, actually, she was going after people in swap soup. Without a permit in order to stop essentially a homeless protest that was trying to feed people at the town clock in 1988 and 89 to bring attention to actually the same kinds of conditions: the abuse by police, troll busting by private bigots, and the sleeping ban. You know,
I remember the pigeon poop sentinel version of it.
Yeah, they...
Typical, like what they did at Campbell Street. Bunch of liars. Anyway, that's not what I call it. I want to tell you about this law.
Mm-hmm.
This is a real law that California passed. They said it's okay for restaurants and grocery stores to give away the day-old stuff that they don't sell and the produce and stuff. It won't be against the law, no matter what their particular insurance companies tell them. In California, you can do that.
Well, you've been around the area for at least two decades, Linda. Why isn't that? This was the question of the caller was, why isn't the Homeless Services Center accepting food? I mean, why can't?
It's more work. They got the key people that aren't on burnout from dealing with the concourse of humanity are trying to do too much. You know, they all need a hot tub or a weekend off or something. And more people need to step up to the plate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's that potential.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason not to. No big reason not to.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It's like
condemning mothers for still having children or something. It's just people aren't thinking about it. You know? They just have to talk to each other more. But anyway, so it's now legal. I think, I can't remember when it was, like, 82 or something. No, it was closer to the earthquake. Anyway, it's legal now. The grocery stores that used to pour lye over the stuff they put in the dumpsters down there, it was a different store back then, but down there where Donato's is. You know, now they can actually give that to people. They can set up recycled bins, you know, just like a European market if they wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know you work for a group called Housing Now in Santa Cruz.
Yeah, we helped shape that law and get it passed along with the Welfare Parent Support Group back then and a few lawyers that let us peck their brains.
And you've also been a close observer of City Council. I guess you saw the latest Thursday budget hearing where Keith Sugar, surprisingly enough, spoke up in favor of more shelter, which to me is kind of shocking because I've been ragging on these council members all winter for not only doing nothing about decriminalizing sleeping, but during the worst months of the year, not creating any new shelter or dealing with the summer shelter problem.
I like it. Later on in that same night's meeting.
Maybe you can give us a report on that meeting. You know.
No, I can't, but yeah. I can give you a few highlights.
Okay.
It was apparently, I didn't see the agenda. They didn't run little liners on the show like they usually would on a Tuesday. But my take was, it was a brainstorming discussion for the staff who has to propose a budget for the coming annual year would have some guidelines. And it just seemed to me that the new guys were just enthusiastic and really doing it, you know, they weren't just trying to hang with whatever was the traditional thing.
You mean Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar we're talking, right?
Yeah.
Those are the new people? Go ahead.
Yeah. And it's nice to have some fresh energy on the City Hall campus.
Mm-hmm.
or speaking as a citizen.
So you said that they weren't going with the old program.
They just were doing stuff. Everybody else was sitting there like, you know, they were going to leave it all on the city manager's shoulders and say, yeah, we think everything's going great, you know, people. Once the guys started saying, well, I'd like to see this and that, and where would you put that in this budget, then the other ones, like Cynthia Matthews, started perking up a little too, but usually it's a staged discourse. I've seen it one time, some other time in person.
What new programs actually were proposed, you know?
Well, they weren't proposing programs. I'm saying this is like a brainstorming overview. You know, basically the staff comes to the city formally and says, what would you like to see in your budget, you know?
Well, what should we say? What kinds of proposals were made that you thought were of interest?
Well, I really, really liked it that when Sugar was talking about just basic shelters being created and opened up, he kept putting it in the plural. That was really neat, you know.
And what was Michael
like
Rodkins?
Everybody in town is talking about we need them, so why aren't they in the budget?
Right.
That's what I want to see.
Well, what did Councilmember Rodkins say about that?
I don't know. What did he say about that? He seemed more like doing on legal things at that meeting.
Well, I actually had an interview with Scott Graham, who was... Catherine Byers had promised that anybody who wanted to could kind of interrupt by raising their hand and making some comments. So it would have been a perfect time for you or me or anybody who wanted to say something to go. But of course,
yeah. That
was the same evening they were doing six other things, one of which was
the
Yugoslav Forum Committee, which was the one I was on. But anyway, Scott Graham said was that he said that Rodkin was essentially, it was kind of Rodkin versus Sugar.
Well, Rodkin was the only one that spoke up to him, but it didn't seem to me that he had any alternative proposal or, you know, vision or intent.
So Sugar was proposing a number of shelters, and Rodkin was saying, oh, that's been tried before.
No, he was doing his usual, well, you know, it's not our business to create these things. I'm paraphrasing. But, you know, if somebody came to us, and then he folds his arms and he leans back, if you studied communications and body language, it's interesting. And then he's, you know, we'd be very friendly if some nonprofit came to us with just the right proposal, like they were going to do something.
Yeah. Yeah, that has been Rodkin's line for the last decade.
Well, I think Norma Tasker or somebody that can do it as a person, a citizen, or a neighborhood group ought to do it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Not waiting for a nonprofit, because these nonprofits have all kinds of stupid tied-up money rigmaroles.
Well, I know that Rodkin has been claiming that for a decade. If only somebody came to him, he would be really interested in a shelter proposal. But for some reason, just nobody ever has. And so therefore, though actually a few people have come to him. Barbara Riverwoman and Sherry Connable came to him with a proposal for a campground, I think called Options, Community Options. I'm not quite sure it was something.
Well, I think they've been very responsive in this city in terms of money that serves frontline and emergency needs. The city doesn't do a whole lot for health, but apparently the county's mandated to try to make it there for everyone. I don't believe it. Doesn't seem to work.
Well, I can't really agree with you, Linda. I don't think that 28 emergency shelter spaces in the summer is responsive in any way, shape, or form to the needs of people in the summer.
No, I'm not saying that the send-out is responsive.
Right.
But I'm saying when the nonprofit got it all figured out and brought it to them, they gave it to them. They solved the campground behind the River Street Shelter for $1 to that Paige Smith's early...
Citizens Committee for the Homeless.
Yes. I mean, I don't think it was a straight deal. It was very corrupt, but, you know, before any other cities or the county, in every instance, they've provided funding for the kind of things that people brought in. But people are bringing in, you know, garages that were meant for rehabilitating trucks and tractors or something.
You're talking about the current homeless services center bays. You're talking about the place where people eat the free meal.
Yeah, I think if you're going to concentrate that much of a multiplied services, you need to have more planning and have the people that are using it do the planning. People that have to be there daily or frequently, you know. They have to be involved in it, or it's not going to be maximally used.
Any meetings coming up that we should be aware of that you're think we should know about here at Free Radio?
No, I don't know of any good meetings. Mm-hmm. I have to go to a couple meetings Wednesday.
Well, I know that I went to a meeting with you at the Community Action Board where there were a lot of very eloquent women and some eloquent men speaking.
Oh, yeah. The first time in my life, Skip, it gave me a thumbs up in public.
Mm. Well, that may happen again. Never can tell.
I don't know. I don't have time to worry about
it. I actually have a few of those people that I hope to interview and have on the air talking about the gross deficiencies in local services and the rent scandal and some stuff we've covered very briefly.
Yeah.
I'm also going to be reading after I hang up stories in the paper regarding welfare, slashing, we might call it. Anything you want to say around
How about welfare creaming?
Going
the governors are sitting on the money that's supposed to be helping take care of families right now.
Okay.
But the important thing I called about, everybody needs to know this. You work for a licensed restaurant or grocery store or anything in between. The stuff that's too old to serve in your restaurant or on the shelf can be given away. It doesn't have to be dumpstered.
Fair enough. Well, thank you, Linda.
Yeah.
Any more you want to add?
No, I don't think so.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm.